You know I be in the town all day. I be in the SEA. You know I be in the town all day. I be in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton, joined today by one of 13 players in Sonics history to record a triple-double.
Wow.
As well as the former head coach of the Phoenix Suns. Thanks for joining us, Earl Watson.
That's a cool stat. I feel better now about myself and my NBA career for 13 years. I appreciate being on.
Let's start with the reason you're here in Seattle this weekend with the JBA. Tell us a little bit about the league and your involvement with it.
The JBA, put together by LeVar Ball and the Ball family, a big baller brand. We're coming here for our first official tryouts. And the JBA, you know, is... No one's really addressed it, and you know how I see it and how I view it, why I got involved, is it's a league for 17 to 20 year old kids who can't get into college or who are just getting kind of like, you know, in a nice way of putting it, being released from college for grades, for other circumstances, sometimes family situations. Like, you know, working in the G League, we found John Simmons in an open tryout. So we're hoping to find that kid and change lives and save lives. Instead of letting them just play basketball where I grew up, you see a lot of these kids get, you know, never make it to college and have this amazing talent. They end up in the wrong places in life. So we're trying to kind of curve that and replace that with an opportunity. But what really attracted me to it is the fact that it's financial literacy classes, the fact that it's etiquette classes, and we're now working on a special program where they will be connected and offered opportunities to attend, you know, certain universities online. So I'm actually working with UCLA on that to offer them online classes. They have to choose to do it. We can't make them, but the opportunity should be there.
You mentioned guys who don't make it for various reasons. I think everybody has those stories. I mean, here in Seattle, it's Brandon Roy's older brother, Ed, who people considered as good as he or better than he was.
Yeah.
I mean, how many players did you know like that who you think could have really done something at the collegiate level or professionally if they had just been able to get that opportunity?
Well, I'm from Kansas City. I'm from Kansas. And Missouri is just walking across the street, Kansas City, Missouri. So I grew up, and my favorite players were those guys who couldn't make it, and they didn't make it, whether they didn't pass the ACT or SAT, or something happened where they was working too many jobs after school and never had a chance to play basketball to support the family. And those were the guys I looked up to. You know, Michael Jordan is amazing, but the guys you go in the rec center and you play against and you see them, those are the guys you kind of attract to, you aspire to be. And those guys just almost like changed my life as far as like visualizing maybe one day playing basketball.
You mentioned your experience working in the D League with the Austin Spurs. Now there's, you know, the idea that that could be an alternative to college for players who don't want to spend 1 year in college. From your experience, how set up is the G League to handle those kind of players? And do you feel like JBA can be a better place for players who aren't interested in playing college basketball?
I think I have a unique experience because, you know, I had travel teams 30 plus in Southern California and Kansas City. And then I coached in the G League, and then I coached in the NBA. And I have these different, unique experiences, and the only college experience I have is as a player. And I think the G League will have to change some things. I think monitoring the players have to be different. They will have to change the contractual situation, obviously the pay. And in the G League, I don't know if it changed or not, because it's been almost 2 or 3 years since I've been there. But if you don't play, you don't get paid. So I think that would have to change as younger kids. I think the JBA is unique because it's not competitive towards the G League, the NBA, or college. It's just dealing and actually attracting and embracing a platform for a group of kids who are kind of like that, kind of lost within the basketball world. And maybe, you know, maybe one day we do find a John Simmons. And those are the stories we want to tell. But we also want to change lives and give them opportunities, not just play in the United States, but also overseas.
Do you see your involvement as sort of an extension of what you've done at the youth level with your AAU teams?
I think that's where I first met the Ball family, so it's kind of similar. And my involvement, I think, is like a lens from different perspectives. And, you know, the dialogue back and forth with LeVar and the family has been amazing. They want to do something bigger than themselves, and they know this could potentially be it. They want to give back, and it's kind of rare to hear that from LeVar, right? People think he's something else, but my experience with him has always been amazing. And he's excited about providing platforms and saving kids who get lost, you know, from playing rec league, get kicked out of junior college, and sometimes they end up in the streets. Just to be completely frank, they end up dead or in jail.
All right, well, let's talk a little about your Sonics career, reminisce about that. What place does the city of Seattle hold in your career, having started here and then come back a second time?
I remember when I first came here from my draft workout, I was leaving UCLA, and I was told if I don't show up, it would be major consequences from the Seattle Sonics. So I jump on a late flight. I get into Seattle like maybe 1:30 in the morning. I get to the hotel, and the hotel doors are locked. So I slept kind of outside of the hotel until 6 a.m., my workout was at 8, and I thought I was going to do terrible. I was tired. I went in there. I did my best. Nate McMillan was the coach. Gary Payton was my vet. And, of course, they drafted me. So to being drafted to Seattle, to me, it's amazing. Coming back to Bellevue, and this didn't exist. Like, the city's yep. really – the city's growing. The city needs an NBA team. Like, they need one bad. Like, I don't – the Sonics need to come back. I'm definitely for that campaign. And I was on the last team that was here when we left to OKC, and – I can say this very openly, that team and those group of players were very heartbroken to leave Seattle.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Let's start with your first year here. What was it like playing with Gary Payton as a point guard, as a rookie, coming into the league with him as a mentor?
For me, it wasn't intimidating. It was more as if my favorite player had just walked into my life, as he truly was. I love the way he dominated the floor defensively. I love the way he created and made his teammates better. I love how he talked trash. So for me, that was an amazing opportunity. He became a mentor to me, became a big brother. He's still a lifelong friend. I still look up to him. We had these deep conversations now about life and transitioning and where the sport is really going as far as the NBA and the culture. But Gary Payton was everything. And then I had Nate McMillan as my head coach, another veteran point guard, and Dwayne Casey as my assistant. So I had these amazing mentors around me early in life, and they continued to set up my NBA career. And I think because of that entry and that entrance, and Howard Schultz was the owner, which was amazing because he really cared about the players, and Wally Walker was a part of it, and you know, just this amazing group of people. I've been very fortunate to have a great NBA cornerstone to set up my career.
Was Nate more difficult, you think, on you because of the fact that he was a former point guard than he would have been another rookie?
I think Nate was more difficult because it was maybe his second year as a head coach. So he was finding his voice and finding his relationship boundaries with players, because that transition is very unique from going from the one locker room to the office. And you got to make sure you find a unique transition in different space and still create opportunities of, you know, communication and understanding, but you're now a coach.
Was it difficult then to leave that group when you signed as a free agent with the Grizzlies the following summer?
It was difficult to leave that group, but I went to another mentor who kind of, you know, impacted my life since my first day at UCLA, and Jerry West, and then eventually Hubie Brown. So, you know, I transitioned to some amazing guys and another amazing program. I was very fortunate to go from Seattle to that group in Memphis.
You spend a couple years in Memphis, then stint in Denver, and then return in 2006 at the trade deadline. How are you feeling about coming back to Seattle, and how is that opportunity different now that, you know, they had Luke Ridenour at that point, but needed a little more experience at point guard?
Luke and I are almost the same age. We play against each other in college, you know, which is amazing. But it's the only time I've ever been traded in my career, after 13 seasons. And I asked for a trade, and my agent asked me, you know, where do you want to go? And here are the options. And Seattle was one of those options. I was like, send me back to Seattle. It was just kind of like, you know, my comfort place. It was my place of resilience and also perseverance and this amazing introduction identity into the NBA. So I wanted to come back. The group at that time was different. Bob Hill was the coach. It was unique. Howard was just getting almost about to get off of the team and sell the team. But the fan base was still the same. The home court was still the same. And this time I came back, I had Ray Allen and Rashard Lewis, who I had previously. He matured, but Ray Allen kind of replaced Gary Payton as like that guy leading us into playoffs with Luke Ridenour and Nick Collison, who's one of my closest friends.
How was Rashard different when you came back? You mentioned, I think that was his fourth season in the league when you played with him the first time. And then by the next period, you know, he was starting to come into his own as an all-star.
He was different in the fact that he was a guy that was now closing games. And basically, he was an all-star. He was hitting big shots. He extended his range beyond the three. He kind of was the first to start, you know, the small ball. You know, he was playing him at the four, extending him, picking and popping, spreading the court. And he became this amazing cornerstone of our offense. And he and Ray played great off each other, both sides of the court. You had one option or the other, and they were both dynamic together.
What was Ray like as a teammate?
Ray was different from Gary. Gary was more old school, traditional, very vocal, very accountable, very get in your face and cuss you out. Ray was more diplomatic, talk to you, try to explain it, you know, get deeper into it and just kind of do it more in a more polished way. So you had two different ways. And at that time, also, Ray wasn't the only leader. Gary used to be the only voice. Vin Baker was on that team my rookie year, so he's kind of quiet. But Ray and Rashard kind of led together.
Mm-hmm. Have you read Ray's book, or do you plan to?
I haven't read Ray's book. I don't know if he even, does he touch on Seattle?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it yet. All the excerpts have been about the Celtics.
I hope he touches on Seattle, because I thought that was an amazing time. And Ray was one of my, you know, one of my funnest memories was being his teammate. He's a good guy. His mom is amazing. I love how she would come to the games, and I think she was more emotional than any player on the court. And it was just amazing to see her get into the game, and his family was really awesome. It was cool to really meet the extension of him.
You guys had a good run at the end of that 2005-06 season after the trade deadline, but fell short of the playoffs. Next year, a lot of injuries, end up kind of working for lottery positioning and getting the number two pick in the draft. You wonder about what might have happened if they would have kept that team together and added Kevin Durant?
I think when you sell an NBA team, you kind of position yourself to kind of remove salary.
Right.
And at that time, when we drafted Kevin Durant, we didn't have to trade Ray Allen, and we could have re-signed Rashard Lewis. But instead, it kind of cleared it out for Kevin to come in, low salary, new ownership. And it gives the owner a chance to create his own masterpiece, so to speak. And I just really think if Kevin would have stayed with Ray and Rashard, that team would have been maybe the Warriors of today.
Right. I mean, he would have probably ended up playing, you would have him and Rashard as a front court. I mean, that's a very modern, you know, combo 3-4 group.
Yeah, and the three-point shooting would have been way before its time. So you can say, you know, you missed it and you should have kept them together and changed the game of basketball. Or you can say they had to leave, meaning Ray and Rashard, so Kevin Durant could become Kevin Durant.
Right. You end up going from a more veteran team to a much younger team. Had some veterans in the locker room, Kurt Thomas, Wally Szczerbiak. But did you feel that was an opportunity for you to step into more of a leadership role the following season?
I think anytime you get new ownership, you get new front office, it's a change of everything. So you really didn't know what to expect. The main thing you wanted to do is stay in rotation, stay a part of the plans, find a way to play, and to continue to get better. And that was the first time losing really started to hit me in my NBA career. Usually it's been playoffs, going from UCLA postseason, and NBA postseason. And that transition started to change. And that model became the NBA as we see today. Young talent, younger players, and let's see who really connects and grows.
Right, I mean, sort of a process-esque
kind of thing. Yeah.
For you individually, what was that season like? Your first opportunity to really kind of be a full-time starter and had that aforementioned triple-double. What was it like for you individually?
For me, the ending was better. On the beginning was the unknown because PJ Carlissimo was a new coach. You had new ownership, and you had Sam Presti, a new GM. And I love that they came from San Antonio, so you knew we'd get some great teaching on accountability and winning and how to build a program. But the losing was really, really unique. It was great to see Kevin grow, and my game kind of grew with his game. When he grew, I kind of got better because as he took on most of the challenge, he made the game easier for me. So it was a testament to his skill and his transparency as a player growing in front of our eyes as a kid. Was 18 at the time, turning 19, so it was amazing to see his growth.
Could you tell right away that he was going to accomplish what he has accomplished in his career?
You couldn't tell because you've never seen anyone of his kind. You've never seen someone 6'11", 7 feet tall who can handle the ball. And at that time, he was physically incapable early in the season of doing what he's doing, obviously, today. But I think he grew towards the season. At the end of the season, you saw this physicality just kind of take over games and his athleticism, and you just saw some amazing things down the stretch. And those were glimpses of Kevin Durant as we see today.
The end of that season, he sort of grew into a larger role, and the team started to have some success, even though you traded off a bunch of veterans at midseason. Was that kind of the start of something that eventually carried over, you think, in Oklahoma City?
I think it was the start of something, but once again, once we left, it was a new start, a whole new regime, and it changed once again. So I think at that time, the Sonics, who became the Thunder, was looking for consistency and platforms and visions that they can build around certain players.
All right, so the Blazers have sort of become a bit of a hometown team in Seattle, despite that rival you mentioned, especially for my brother, who is now describing them as my Blazers. someone, unfortunately. What was your season in Portland like, in the last season of your career, the last stop in the NBA?
It was my last stop in the NBA, year 13, season 13 in Portland, and it was a young Dame Lillard, LaMarcus Aldridge, Wesley Matthews, Nico Batum, and Robin Lopez, who to me is my favorite guy ever in the NBA. Whether he's Rolo and talks in third person, or he's Robin Lopez and talks as a Stanford grad or a Stanford student, right? He's amazing. But my experience in Portland was awesome. I kind of felt like I was close to Seattle, but it wasn't Seattle. It kind of had the beginning to the end feel. And for me, just the run we had and how we kind of changed that culture and being a part of that change and just seeing Dame Lillard grow into who he is today and hitting the shot versus the Rockets gave him amazing confidence. Just seeing where they are today was an amazing opportunity to be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, from the team standpoint, was that shot against Houston like the best moment perhaps you experienced?
I want to say it's the best moment. I think it's the best moment for any player I've ever seen have, because that moment gave him a confidence and a platform that put him on the national stage, which allowed him to continue to get into All-Star games by, you know, late votes after players got hurt. Now just voted in, and he's been doing it the hard way his entire life. And he's a West Coast guy, and, you know, just to see him do it in his second year was big time.
You mentioned a lot of the coaches you played for, including here in Seattle. When you made that transition into coaching, which of those coaches you had played for kind of had the most impact on you in terms of your philosophy and how you coached?
Well, Hubie Brown, of course, just is the way he communicated, how he teaches the game. He always teaches the why. The why is very important. He attacks everything, you know, every team in two ways, vertically or horizontal. And you got to understand the defense to attack the strategies. And Bob Hill was there with me the first season, who brought in that philosophy and that calm. And I've been there before and just kind of kept everything kind of in the present for me and kept me in the present without overthinking. So those two guys were amazing. And RC and Pop, my experiences in San Antonio and what they'd done for me was always a phone call away. So I called RC a lot. And sometimes Pop called me to cuss me out about having practice too long. No, I practiced one time for almost 2.5 hours, and, you know, he called me, and he asked me, who did I think I was, Pat Riley? He was like, get out of practice in 1:25. If you can't teach it in 1:25, you almost shouldn't go over. Like, and the same philosophy he told me exactly what Coach Wooden told me on his couch at UCLA. You know, getting in and out 1:25, 1:30, don't keep them too long because attention span leaves. So just, I've been very blessed at these basketball, you know, geniuses around me my entire life, my entire career, and still to this day, I still think about what they taught me and put it into my own personality.
All right, we've gotten some good stories. We got the big picture perspective on Gary Payton. What's your best Gary Payton story that you can tell?
That I can tell, right?
Right.
The funniest story is I remember I get drafted. So this is when training camp lasted for rookies for 14 straight days. There was no rules. Now, like, training camp is only 3 days and you have to give them a day off. Like, that didn't exist then. It was no such as time. Now it's a time limitation. When I got drafted, you was here all day. So we came in for a rookie camp, which is a week. And Gary Payton walks in and we playing pickup at this point. He walks in some overalls, right?
And this is already starting good.
This is starting good, right? And we're playing up and down, and he's typical Gary. He wants to make life hard for a rookie. So he yells, you know, in his Gary voice, hey, stop the game. So I'm dribbling across, stop. I never seen anyone stop pickup, but it's Gary Payton and Sonics. It's his franchise. I stop and I go, what's up? He goes, your teammates are tired. I was like, yeah, we've been playing for like 1.5 hours. He goes, we'll call it effing timeout. I said, like, I've never seen anyone call a timeout in a pickup game. He's like, I said, call it effing timeout. I was like, okay, timeout. And he walked out the gym. He just wanted to mess with me. It's typical hazing, right? It's typical hazing. But during training camp, I think we got this unique unspoken bond. And he never messed with me again to the point where it was the end of the season going into the playoffs versus the Spurs. And I had to pull him to the side. I was like, I came here and I thought you was going to make it difficult on me. He was like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm here. You haven't yelled at me yet. You haven't cussed me out. You're not Gary Payton with me. You're like Big Brother GP. He was like, that's what you want? I was like, man, I want to learn. You need to teach me. I might not ever have this opportunity again. And he was like, you know, in his typical Gary reaction, that's what the F you want? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, let's start with this. Take your ass over there and give me some Gatorade with 2 ice cubes. And then I'll teach you. I'm like, swear. He's like, I swear. So I run over there. I get some Gatorade, put in 2 ice cubes, and bring it back. And he starts laughing and drinks his Gatorade. and he took me on the court and he started walking me through how to run a pick and roll, how to defend a pick and roll, how to bump a player off a pick and roll, angles, how to get away where the referee can't see, how to almost grab them by the waist where the referee can't see. And that led me to being a defensive-minded point guard for the rest of my career. So he changed my basketball life.
Interesting. So you didn't come in with that mindset necessarily?
I didn't come in with that knowledge.
Okay.
Remember, Gary Payton was the best on-the-ball defender that we probably ever seen in the league. His on-ball defense was amazing. And it was always tricks where I could never see what he was doing with his hands and his forearms. And when he got me and took me on the court, he taught me the tricks of the trade. And I've gotten a lot of steals off of that. Like, it was amazing. And I also learned how to talk to the referees, how you have to have some banter with them, sometimes cuss back and forth, kind of like leveraging for them not to make those calls.
Right.
So he taught me very well.
All right. How about your best Ray story?
My best Ray stories were always in the locker room before the games. He was very over analytical about every book he's read or these political debates. You know what I'm talking about.
I mean, that was my favorite season, that 2004-05 season, the year before you got back, because he would just hold court for an hour, or like 45 minutes, I guess, is how long the locker was open back then, every game. And it was great conversation.
He literally talked till tip-off. And it had nothing to do with the game. It was about a book he read or something he saw on CNN, and this is why this is the way it is. And it was very enlightening, and at the same time, it was like different, because Gary Payton, before every game, would sit in his locker and be silent and have a Big Mac, right? Supersized fries and an orange drink, supersized, before every game with some Advil.
And this is Gary Payton in his 13th season.
In his 13th season, All-Star, dropping 55, right? And he ate McDonald's before every game, which Ray was complete opposite.
Yep.
He was a food junkie as far as eating proper, not having too many sweets, too many sugars, more fruit, and I can't eat that, it's too many carbs. It was complete opposites, polar opposites, but they both were impactful for the game.
Yeah, I mean, they both Hall of Famers.
Both Hall of Famers.
All right, well, really appreciate the time. This is a lot of fun, and thanks for doing this.
Amazing memories, man. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.